Welcome to In the Hive, a show that explores the issues and ideas that tie Utah together. I'm Roger McDonough. Earlier this week, Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski announced that she was filing a lawsuit against the Utah Inland Port Authority, saying that the creation of the Inland Port was unconstitutional. A little bit later in today's show, we're going to turn to a conversation about the specific clause in the Utah Constitution that serves as the basis for Salt Lake City's suit, the so-called Ripper Clause that is meant to protect cities and towns from having their municipal or taxing functions stripped away by the legislature. First, though, on Tuesday, I sat down with the mayor to hear about why she was suing now, and how she was getting around language adopted by the Salt Lake City Council prohibiting her from suing without first getting their consent. While the council has been in dialogue with the state and the Inland Port Authority Board, Mayor Biskupski has sat out negotiations over the development of the port. She joined me here at KCPW's studios on Tuesday afternoon. Mayor Biskupski, thanks very much for making the time, and I know it's limited, but we really appreciate your being here.
You're welcome.
On Monday, you announced that you are suing over the Utah Inland Port. The court filing explains the history pretty thoroughly and says that the bill that created the port at last year's legislative session was unconstitutional for a number of reasons. One of those has to do with a specific clause in the state constitution. I guess before we dig into those details, can we talk about the relief you are seeking, to use the legal terminology? Or maybe a better way of putting this is, what is the objective of the lawsuit?
Ultimately, we are asking the court to find that the power of the Inland Port Authority to reverse municipal land use decisions and to take 100% of the tax increment from project areas violates the Utah Constitution. What the lawsuit does is it challenges the state's action in usurping tax and land use authority from Salt Lake City in the Inland Port legislation. And many people believe this violates the Ripper Clause, which is a clause in the state constitution, which holds that cities are vested with the power of core municipal functions.
And this is the sort of harm that is being inflicted upon the community. I mean, in from your perspective, the harm is the usurping of that.
Yeah, in the lawsuit, what we're saying is without taxing an ultimate land use authority, the city has virtually no control over the development, what it'll look like, and we will receive none of the tax that is generated from the project. Hmm. Yet we are required to provide municipal services, and then we have to try and bill to get paid for those services. So it's really absurd in many ways.
Hmm. You know, you've said that you sort of had your hand forced, at least on the timing of this, because of a bill up at this year's legislative session. That bill aims to prevent you from even being able to sue. Is that correct?
Yeah, this year's bill, instead of trying to make amends, the state appears to be doubling down and growing the legal challenges, one of them being that in the bill it would say that the mayor of a municipality cannot sue over this issue without support of council, their own city council, my city council.
Right, which I guess speaks to, you know, if you look at being able to sue, this is something that the city council already said as well. They passed, I guess it was an ordinance aimed at preventing you from suing as well, without their permission, that is. You filed the lawsuit, though, which shows that you were indeed able to do this. Did you seek their permission beforehand?
So when the council did that last June, they adopted a budget resolution which said the mayor could not use city funds for any impact litigation unless approved by the city council. And, of course, I took that to the city attorney, and in August of last year, the city attorney issued an opinion that stated, you know, while the power of the purse lies with the legislative branch, case law clearly defines controlling litigation as an executive function, meaning the budget restriction impermissibly encroaches on my executive authority. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they can't do it.
I mean, if you had gone to the city council and said, hey, can I have your permission to sue, I'm imagining that they in this moment probably would have turned you down. There's a difference of opinion over how negotiations over the inland port should be handled. And I think that has to do with having a seat at the table or not having a seat at the table. This is a quote actually from Councilman James Rogers in the Salt Lake Tribune.
So I've been to the table, but I also know what's on the table. Right. You know, it's like we'll only cut off one finger instead of all five if you agree to this. Like, it's really absurd negotiating going on. And what I'm hoping is that we can get the community not just behind me, but also encouraging the city council to get behind me and join me in this lawsuit and stand with me on the right side of history in fighting for the rights of this community and fighting on behalf of our school children who stand to lose the most money is our public school system, you know, who will ask them to stand with me on behalf of this city and not subject our residents to having to pay for an inland port that this community doesn't want, that they know will pollute our air, that they know is going to be used to pull the last of the fossil fuels out of Grand Staircase and Bears Ears National Monument, all things that our community morally and ethically are opposed to. And what I'm hoping is that the community rises up and says, come on, City Council, join the mayor. This is the right journey to be on. Let's do this battle together.
The city council, you could imagine saying, hey, we're here negotiating for a better port. The port's going to happen one way or another, and we think that having that seat at the table is worth it. You're saying, essentially, it's not worth negotiating away so much. Is that your argument, that when it was unconstitutional in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, it's unconstitutional. So why should we as a community be okay with that? We absolutely should not be. And, you know, this city has been relied upon for many years to take on the state on the most difficult challenges we have faced, whether it's marriage equality or it was the Legacy Highway or whatever. The communities around us have relied on us to really rise up and stand up for what we believe in. And this is one of those moments in time where, yes, the city, of course, should rise up and challenge this overreach and this unconstitutional piece of legislation.
You know, I'm not a legal scholar, but in the United States Constitution, we have all powers not granted to the federal government are given to the states. And then you have cities, which are political subdivisions of states. I guess what I'm kind of wondering is,
Interesting. I'm sorry, but the city was here years, decades before the state had even become a state. So let's just start there. But I will say that, there is a Ripper Clause in place for just this purpose. And
I've got it here if you want. It says, the legislature shall not delegate to any special commission, private corporation, or association any power to make, supervise, or interfere with any municipal improvement, money, property, or effects, whether held in trust or otherwise, to levy taxes, to select a capital site, or to perform any municipal functions.
Right.
And this is the legal argument you're using. Are you optimistic that it will work?
Yes, absolutely I'm optimistic. And I'm, the timing of filing the suit, happened because of this year's legislation really putting my back to the wall. And so we had to file when we did. But I believe that we have a very strong case and will be successful.
What happens then? I mean, if you are successful, does it revert to square one, point zero, where the city once again, because to be clear, you're not opposed to an inland port, just the usurpation of
land. Well, here's what I'll say. What is an inland port? And has the state even defined what this thing looks like yet? So what I will say is the city should be developing the land within its boundaries as we see fit. And we're very good at it. For instance, we're doing a $3.6 billion brand new airport on the same footprint of the old airport. It's an extraordinary project. We have the expertise to manage very large, complicated projects, and we're not even using a taxpayer dollar on that project. So to say that the city isn't capable of developing that area, we in fact are the experts and we know how to develop that land. No one else knows it like we do. So I would say we have a very strong case in retaining our authority and our land use authority, our taxing authority, and being able to develop that area in an effective way for the state.
Do you talked about bringing the city council, and I know your time is limited, so just a couple of more questions here, bringing the city council sort of on board with the argument that you are making. And I'm wondering, how did the city and council sort of fall out of step on this? The council began to negotiate with the state over the development of the inland port. You held out until now. You filed this lawsuit based on constitutional arguments. Can you come back together on this?
Well, I'm hoping they do. I hope they see the value in standing with me on a constitutional challenge. This is not challenging them. This is challenging the Port Authority. And I think it's in everyone's best interest if the city is united on this front. And I think the community would appreciate it if the city was united on this front. I don't see a downside for the council in getting on board with this lawsuit. There's tremendous value in letting the courts determine if the state did do something unconstitutional or not.
I guess, and then the other question is, what happens if the state is found to be constitutional and having made their argument? Is there something beyond what you've done that you can do after that point to try and negotiate around changing what the inland port is, or
yeah, I think it's really hard to speculate the future because, again, it's not even clear what is all happening, and the Port Authority still isn't even a full functioning body, and they have no real clear direction still on what it is that they are doing. There is a lot of speculation about what they are doing. And certainly this year's bill reveals that now this model that the state is trying to create isn't just going to affect Salt Lake City, but hello, other communities. We might be coming to a neighborhood near you. Interestingly enough, though, those communities are being treated very differently than Salt Lake. And I think that's a benefit to show the courts that they're saying, we're going to ask for permission to come into those other communities, whereas in Salt Lake, they just did the land grab.
Hmm. Okay, you mentioned that why wouldn't the council come on board, or why wouldn't, what's the benefit in not doing this? I'm sure the state and the Inland Port Authority Board would say, well, we're delaying this project, and they promise commerce, economic development, jobs, things
along
those lines.
Yeah. In my 3 years here, we've done almost $1 billion in capital investment that does not obviously include the airport, which is $3.6 billion. And we've done 9,000 jobs with an average salary of $60,000 a year. So I, again, will say it's absurd to say the state somehow could do this better.
Mayor Biskupski, thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Again, the basis for Biskupski's suit challenging the creation of the inland port is Article 6, Section 28 of the Utah Constitution, the Ripper Clause. To learn more about the clause and how it plays into all of this, I reached out to reporter Matthew Piper, who in July of last year wrote a story about the Ripper Clause for the Deseret News. The headline of that story read, "Some think one sentence in the Utah Constitution might undo the inland port authority." Matt joined me by phone yesterday from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where he now lives. Matt, long time no talk to, and thanks very much for joining me today on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So I sort of brushed by this in my interview with Jackie earlier in the show, but Maybe you could describe for us what the Ripper Clause is and why it has been seen as a potential justification for challenging the creation of the inland port.
Yeah. So despite the exciting name, it's just a single dry sentence in the state's constitution. And what it says is, quote, that the legislature shall not delegate to any special commission, private corporation, or association any power to make, supervise, or interfere with any municipal improvement, money, property, or effects, to levy taxes, to select a capital site, or to perform any municipal functions. And what some interpret that to mean is a city has the right to basically tell the legislature, hands off our business. And why it might apply to the Inland Port Authority is that even though a few cities have ever actually made this argument in court anywhere, Mayor Biskupski has long believed that the Port Authority is the rare case where the state is coming in and saying, we have final say on land use and tax increment on a portion of city land, and in this case, a fairly large portion, 25 square miles of city land.
I mean, the way that the mayor puts it is this is a usurpation of that land and of that tax authority. Where does this clause come from, Matt? Is it unique to the Utah Constitution, or how did it get into our Constitution?
The history on this is surprisingly murky. Utah is one of about nine states, it seems, with a Ripper Clause. The first one was enacted in Pennsylvania in 1872. After the legislature there gave almost total authority to this special group that had appointed to build a ritzy new city hall in Philadelphia. Since then, there's a little bit of history about how other states around the country followed suit. Utah, as I said, was one of eight that followed suit after Pennsylvania enacted the first one. But there's been almost no record of it having been invoked in any court cases anywhere. There are a few cases in Utah, and that actually makes Utah a little bit of an outlier. Even though, you know, on the face of it, it's a pretty strong and ostensibly clear message about the division of powers between cities and their state.
You know, in your article back in July, you wrote about how this has been interpreted in the past in some of those cases in Utah, and in particular, about the way that former Utah Supreme Court Chief Justice Michael Zimmerman decided to weigh the clause. What did he have to say?
Right. So a little bit of backing up just a little bit.
Sure.
So the Ripper Clause singles out special commissions, private corporations, or associations. And the Port Authority isn't a private corporation or an association. So for it to apply, it has to be a quote-unquote special commission. And last year when I wrote that story, the governor's office said it isn't a special commission because the Port Authority is a political subdivision of the state. And the mayor's office says, of course, that it is a special commission. And it's just purely a semantics argument.
Right.
There's really no reason for either side to feel strongly justified in making a blanket statement like that, because in 1988, and what is probably the most depth that the state Supreme Court has ever gone into this, then state Supreme Court Justice Michael Zimmerman wrote that the word special commission don't have any clear meaning. And for that matter, he said municipal doesn't even have a clear meaning. So the whole sentence, that whole one sentence is pretty vague from a legal point of view. And most likely, a judge is going to have to take a stab here at defining that once and for all.
And by that, you mean defining exactly what special commission means, or conceivably what municipal means in this instance?
Right. Right. Yeah, because, I mean, you think about it. A state often comes in and tells a city what can happen within its boundaries. Municipal, I think, to a layperson would probably mean then something that is specific to that city. But even in that case, I mean, you would think that this would have been brought up all the time all over the country if it were that simple.
Right.
So there must be many lawyers in multiple states who have looked at this and said it's really hard to say that, you know, land use or collection of tax increment, et cetera, is definitely specifically a municipal function.
Could this, I don't know if you can answer this question, but I wonder if this could set precedent for other states to use, depending upon how it plays out in the courts.
It wouldn't set precedent, but I do think that a lot of other states would be looking to this for, like I said, maybe the first time anybody has ever tried to bring real clarity to the central question. In the past, in Utah, when this has come up, it's sort of been one of a number of factors in the case, whereas here, really, the question of what a special commission is and what a municipal power is absolutely front and center in what Salt Lake City is alleging.
The central question here. Former Salt Lake City Mayor Ted Wilson was on hand for Mayor Biskupski's announcement that she was filing suit earlier this week. He, though, kind of got the ball rolling back around the time that you wrote your article, right? I mean, he had something to say about this.
Right. In fact, I think the impetus for my story was that Mayor Wilson wrote an editorial in the Salt Lake Tribune that I read. And, you know, Mayor Wilson's a fairly even-keeled guy. He doesn't have the reputation of, you know, constitutional attorney and former Salt Lake City mayor and firebrand Rocky Anderson. So I thought it was a question that I was certainly intrigued by and started asking around. And it's hard to find, you know, legal experts who really want to weigh in. Maybe some of them are preserving the possibility of playing a role in this case, and maybe others are just seeing that lack of precedent and not wanting to go out too far on a limb. But basically, you know, Ted Wilson seems to have persuaded Mayor Biskupski, at least, that there's something to this.
Well, Matt, I can attest to the fact that it's hard to get legal scholars and or people involved in Utah law to comment on this, as I tried to do that for this show. And anyways, it's an interesting part of what's going on. Right, if you can't weigh in, it's hard to say. But what I'm going to do is actually ask you, you know, is this going to get resolved in the lower courts? Is it any predictions about how it will go, Matt Piper?
Yeah, well, I don't know how much my predictions are worth, but it just seems to me as kind of a layperson that that this is something that is likely to go up to the state Supreme Court, and then they're going to have to make a decision about what special commission means and what municipal means that could have pretty far-ranging consequences for cities within the state of Utah. And, you know, I think in the past the city council has talked about the risk of this lawsuit, and you know, I can't speak for them certainly, but one risk would be that it doesn't go your way, and once and for all, the Ripper Clause is sort of neutered, and we know that it doesn't mean, you know, land use or tax increment, et cetera.
Matt Piper is a journalist who wrote the Deseret News article back in 2018 in July about the Ripper Clause, and he joined us from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where he is living now. Matt, thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you, Roger.
Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski's lawsuit hasn't stopped the legislature from taking action on the inland port this session. House Bill 433 would expand the port beyond Salt Lake City into other communities as part of a hub-and-spoke model. That bill is now headed to the governor's desk for a signature. It has the support of the Salt Lake City Council. Meanwhile, amendments to another bill, SB 248, would allow the inland port to capture some portion of the $53 million set aside to help develop a deep water export terminal somewhere along the Pacific coast, either in the U.S. or Mexico, to ship out Utah coal. And that's all the time that we have for the show. You've been listening to In the Hive here on KCPW. Thanks to Jesse Ellis for his help and to Andrew Shaw for our theme music. I'm Roger McDonough. I hope you'll join me again next week.